Every business has an ambition. PayPal Open is the platform designed to help you grow into yours. With business loans so you can expand and access to hundreds of millions of PayPal customers worldwide. And your customers can pay all the ways they want. With PayPal, Venmo, Pay Later, and all major cards. So you can focus on scaling up. When it's time to get growing, there's one platform for all business. PayPal Open. Grow today at paypalopen.com. Loans subject to approval in available locations.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm going to make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you want to get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
How to have fun anytime, anywhere. Step one, go to ChumbaCasino.com.
ChumbaCasino.com. Got it.
Step two, collect your welcome bonus.
Come to Papa, welcome bonus.
Step three, play hundreds of casino-style games for free.
That's a lot of games, all for free.
Step four, unleash your excitement.
Woo-hoo! Chumba Casino has been delivering thrills for over a decade. So claim your free welcome bonus now and live the Chumba life. Visit ChumbaCasino.com.
This is Leslie Kane, and you're listening to That UFO Podcast.
Hi, everyone, and welcome back to That UFO Podcast. My name is Andy, and I am joined on today's show by an investigative journalist, musician, and experiencer. I'd like to welcome to the podcast Mr. William Gallison. William, welcome to the pod.
Thank you very much. It's an honor to be here.
Listen, it's great to have you on. This is one that I didn't see myself doing a month or so ago. I like to think I'm very open-minded on the UFO topic. I think you have to be. I don't easily poo-poo or downplay any aspect of it. I've got my own opinions, my own biases. Everyone does. But when the reports started coming out on the Nazca mummies, the Peru mummies, the Mexican mummies, they've been called all sorts of things. Back in 2023, it kind of hit the headlines with Jaime Maussan again. I was very skeptical, and we'll get into that. And the reason I'm saying this little bit at the start here is it's the volume of listeners who were interested in hearing more about this that really surprised me, especially in the comments online. They were looking for the other side of the story. And I think I was very one-sided on this, that I didn't believe there was much to it as much as I want there to be. You know, I want everything alien to be correct or whatever that may be.
It's a hell of a story. I can understand why you're skeptical. Yeah.
Yeah, no, it is.
And as you'll find out, I've been skeptical on and off since the beginning of this adventure. And I could say that I am now in the much more convinced camp that at least some of these mummies are authentic remains of once living creatures, which is the big question, I guess.
It is, and let's get to the start before we get to the end then. I want to see how I come out thinking about this at the end. I've got a few folks coming on over the next week or two who are on your sort of side of the fence with this whole scenario. But listen, William, let's get into it, because I was really interested listening to your previous interviews with Whitley Strieber you've done. And but you're an investigative journalist, a musician, and an experiencer. So I think that's a good place to start, because your experience or interest in the topic takes you back to childhood, doesn't it?
Yes, it does. And it's the reason why there's no doubt in my mind. I mean, there are three kinds of people, I guess, when it comes to UFOs: the people that believe, the people that don't believe, and the people that know, right? And the people that know are the people that have had their own experiences. Now, mine were, other people might say if I told them the story that it's a matter of belief, but essentially when I was a young boy, 3 to 5 years old, maybe even earlier, I had these recurring visitations, or what I perceived as being recurring visitations, of little men. They actually looked like little men and women in my vision, but I'm not at all confident that that's what they actually were, but they were about the size of the typical gray, and I did not like them at all. And they came in and they took me out of bed and they took me through the closed window. And of course, it wasn't for many years later that I because I was born in 1958. So it was not until many years later that I heard about the sort of archetypal abduction experience, and it just fit, you know, piece by piece. So there was that. And then I've had some sightings in the deep woods of Vermont, where there should not have been anything in the sky, seeing lights just behind the clouds circling wildly like this. I was with another witness. And that summer, it turns out, and I found this out decades later, this is summer of 76, was a huge wave of UFO sightings in Vermont. I was a camp counselor at that time. And at one point, I went to visit a cabin of young kids, and they were terrified because they had been left alone for a few minutes. And they said that they saw this red light just jumping from the top, one treetop to the other on the other side of the lake. And they were crying. They were so confused about it. So I know there was activity, and then I saw what I saw. So, and I could mention other things in my teenage years. I had other, what I consider visitations. Nothing as dramatic as some people have had, like Whitley and other people like that, but enough that I am certain those were real experiences.
There's a massive audience in the UFO topic across the board, and you're always going to get those with their various different interests. You know, you have your nuts and bolt, your consciousness, your spiritual, if you want to call it the woo, whatever that might be. Right. And I've got so many listeners who are very practical nuts and bolts. They look at the current political climate of the UFO topic, and they find that other side a little too much. But equally, there's as many folks who really are passionate about the abduction side of this phenomenon, positive and negative. So to dive into that then, why do you believe your experiences were just that and not an intense lucid dream or something as such?
Well, because I had, well, I had certainly no exposure as a child, or for that matter, for several decades later, to the scenario of abductions. And I suppose if one believes that all abductions were some mental construction, a dream or a fantasy, then one could say that they all would have the same characteristics. But of course, some of those ones that had the same characteristics of mine turned out to have physical evidence, scars and implants and, you know, things moving around and multiple witnesses seeing the things outside, the, you know, et cetera. That wasn't the case in mine, as far as I know. I didn't have any scars or anything like that. But the similarity of what happened to me to those cases in which I think there's very tangible evidence, and that's for people to decide. But I tend to believe, you know, things that are well-researched and by responsible people. And so I would say that that's why I think mine were of the same class as these other ones. And just the fact that they happened as a small child, you know, to me in those very tender age when they seem to, you know, again, occur to many people, I certainly wouldn't have considered them abduction experiences. I thought they were real. I didn't think they were dreams. Of course, my parents told me they were dreams, but it happened over and over again, and it had such an emotional effect on me. That's another aspect of it that makes me think it was something substantial and not just a fantasy or a nightmare. It was the same every single time, and it happened over and over again. So people can draw their own conclusions. I don't stake anything I say on the fact that I am an experiencer, and if people don't want to believe I'm an experiencer, that's perfectly fine with me. Most of my friends don't really want to know about it, and I don't advertise it. But in the context of this interview, I thought I would say that that's where my, part of where my perspective comes from.
No, I don't appreciate
think it has any particular. I don't think I believe that these mummies are real because I was an experiencer. I should make that clear. The evidence is completely separate and apart from my perceived experiences.
No, that's very fair, and I appreciate that. Now, listen, let's get to the mummies. This has been pretty big news worldwide. It's still something that dips in and out of the headlines over here in the UK, as well as much further afield. So it's certainly something that's caught the imagination. I think that's probably where there's been a lack of folks spearheading this that maybe would have been able to speak on it across the pond and everything like that. You know, it's very much been headed up by Jaime Massan, and that was my understanding, William, okay? And what I'm hopefully going to be able to be here is the voice of a lot of the listeners who are trying to understand what's going on. So appreciate where I'm coming from here. So I saw this come up as Jaime Massan, who has a checkered past when it comes to the UFO topic.
No question.
And I know you understand that as well from previous interviews. And this isn't me accusing Jaime of anything deliberate. There has just been a lot of things he has been involved with which have potentially turned out to be false or exaggerated. That may be a naivety. He may have been tricked. It may be all sorts of things. But we're going to try and just concentrate on what he's presenting here. However, it really surprised me when I found out actually Jaime wasn't the guy who went and discovered these with his colleagues who he's presenting this with. This goes back to 2016, and a gentleman, Thierry Jamin, who is a French explorer. Is that correct?
Yeah, he's really about as close as you can get to a Indiana Jones type person. He's an archaeologist. I don't know what his degrees are particularly in that field, but he has made very significant archaeological discoveries in the jungles of Peru. And this had nothing paranormal, nothing to do with UFOs. It was basically trying to find habitations of the Incan Empire, which spread all the way, you know, hundreds and hundreds of miles down the coast of South America. And he has discovered dozens of them that have never been documented, and he's mapped them out and done very scholarly work. And he's respected by a lot of people in the field. He's also made discoveries in Machu Picchu, which has been picked over about as much as can be. But he brought in some new technology, some penetrating radar, and was able to find what appear to be rooms hollow spaces between, you know, beneath what is known.
Chambers, something like that.
And for whatever reason, that became a very hot topic, and the Peruvian government was very concerned about not publicizing that. So he's stepped on the toes of the authorities before, but he's certainly not someone who specializes in the paranormal and the metaphysical like a Jaime Massan, and there's a place for that, and Jaime does it. But that's not Terry's thing. He was an archaeologist, and he has an institute. He calls it an institute in Cusco, where he has several people who work with him, including a very able security guy, who he needs, also very clever, and a photographer. And when he goes on his expeditions, it's usually three or four of them going together. So he would, if I could just continue with that for a moment, he was in his office in Cusco, where I've been many times, and a person came into his office with some specimens and basically put them on the table and said, tell me about these, you know, what are these? This was not the person who's referred to as Mario. I should make that clear. The person referred to as Mario, it's not his real name, is the jacuero or tomb robber. The Spanish word is H-A-Q-U-E-R-O. And it basically means someone who raids ancient sites. And in fact, there's a long history of people of that kind of person in Egypt communicating with the serious archaeologists and giving them clues and tips. So they work together in a way, because the Hakiras are the ones who are doing that every day, and their survival depends on finding things. But in this case, through this fellow Paul Ronceros, Mario delivered some specimens to Thierry. And if I'm not mistaken, the first ones were skulls, which were not readily identifiable. They were apparently skulls, small humanoid looking skulls that were clearly not monkeys, but they were about the size of a large monkey skull. I think in that first cache, there were also some very large hands and several other things, but it was not as spectacular as it would come to be. And Terry was very curious about what these things might be. And I think very responsibly and appropriately, he went on YouTube and he said, does anybody out there in YouTube land know what these things might be? They're mysterious. They're not monkey. They're not human. They're, you know, what are they? And I happened to see that video early on, 2016, maybe 2017. And it really caught my interest. I said, wow, could this possibly be real? You know, I had the same skeptical, but he didn't seem like he was hawking anything. He was genuinely asking people what they thought it might be, or if anyone had knowledge of these things. And I contacted him. I speak a little Spanish and some French, and he does not speak English, which is a large part of the reason why this is not, why his part of the story has not reached us in the United States and the UK, in the English-speaking world, because he is, if I could say, the very opposite of Jaime Maussan in terms of self-promotion and self-aggrandizement, and he's not out for a profit. He manages with the funds that his institute receives, and that's what he's happy with doing. And I'm a good friend of Terry, I should say, up front, and I've known him now for 7 years, and I think he is a person of exceptional morals. So, and I think he's also a person of great discretion, and one could argue, I don't want to put down Jaime, but one could say that his discretion is somewhat sometimes wanting with fiascos like the Roswell mummy thing, which took a lot of people in and let a lot of people down. I don't think Terry would have been involved with a thing like that. Again, he's coming from a science and archaeology background, not from a paranormal background. So he has nothing to prove in that respect. And he was baffled. You know, obviously, what the hell could these things be? It didn't pop into his mind that they were alien at first. They were just anomalous. Anyway, I started a correspondence with Terry, and I had the chance to meet him in France. I was over there doing some musical work, and he was giving a lecture about the mummies. And that's when I really decided that this was something I needed to look into. So what happened with Terry is that this fellow, Paul Ronceros, brought these specimens in, and then gradually over the next few weeks and months, he brought in more and more, and they were more and more dramatic. They were full skeletons or full mummified bodies. They were giant hands with gold inlays. I'm not remembering exactly what else was in those early things. And eventually he was told that there was a human-sized mummy that was being kept in a secret location, and he had the permission to go find it. And that was the one they call Maria.
Yeah.
And I should say also that there were some other specimens that were extremely crude looking. And I can understand why a person like Dr. Masters would look at them and say, that thing could never walk. That thing could never function in the world. That is part of the mystery here. If you conclude that this is some kind of criminal enterprise making fake things, then it would be very foolish for someone to put in the crude stuff with the really refined stuff that nobody can explain how they're made. And it's not obvious that the crude ones are crudely made. They just may be crude biological specimens. They may be remains of something that didn't work. And so I say, if your viewpoint is that this is a criminal enterprise and they're trying to foist things on people, then it would seem very illogical that, you know, and you could say, well, you see, these first ones were very crude and then they got better at making them or something. That was what Dr. Masters, my view at this point, and that of the people I think who know most about the case, is that there was some kind of enterprise going on for a very long period of time at this location, and it had to do with genetic engineering. Very possibly not in the way that we think of genetic engineering today, with CRISPR and all these techniques, but some kind of what we might call metaphysical manipulation of genetics. And I will explain why we've come to that conclusion later. But if one goes with that notion as a presupposition, then these crude type bodies could be early or could be genetic experiments that just didn't work out, perhaps. you know, so that, that's
let my... me just yeah no thank you let me just wrap up for myself and just so I get it straight, and also for anyone curious, William is mentioning Dr. Masters. That's Dr. Michael Masters. You may have heard him on the podcast a few times doing various interviews. I had him on last month or 2 months ago. I think, William, you'll have seen that piece where Michael Masters is an anthropologist. He's very skeptical of this whole mummy situation, came on, gave his point of view. And I think Dr. Masters, while passionate about, you know, his ideals, he's very clear to say he's not studied the specimens. He would love to, but obviously that involves money and travel and all that kind of stuff that would...
I'd like to address that, but... He did, and I'm not here to put down Dr. Masters in any way, shape, or form, and I have tremendous respect for him. I'm from a family of academics, and I know the kind of discipline and effort that goes into that standing in the field. And I am not that. I am not a scientist. I'm just a fairly smart guy who has followed the facts of this case. So I'm not trying to counter him argument by argument. My basic argument is that he has, as he readily admits, has not really looked at the evidence. And that's what I want to get... You know, and I can understand that. My brother is a world-renowned physicist, and he won't touch the UFO subject, and he won't look at the evidence. So I can't convince him because it's a closed door for him. When Master says that he was not able to get access to the things, I have to disagree with that, because Terry has made it perfectly clear from the very beginning that anyone who wanted to have the, all the DNA sequencing data, all the carbon-14 dating, not anyone off the street, but any credentialed scientist who had a interest in this could come to Peru. Yes, there's a $1,000 trip, whatever it is, not the end of the world, and view these things for himself or herself. And I don't think Dr. Masters availed himself of that, possibly because he just didn't put enough credence into it to make the trouble. That's what I would say. But
that's fair. And I don't want to go back as if I'm in the middle of yourself and Dr. Masters, and it's not the type of show for the drama side of things. I would love to get both of you on to speak side by side, because I think it'd be an interesting conversation. But I also think I've heard from other folks that, not through Thierry or yourself, but the folks who may be spearheading this at the moment have made it difficult, despite what they say, for some folks to get their hands on specimens or indeed study
them. No doubt of. In fact, I have personal experience with that, because Terry is actually examining at this time a different set of mummies, but clearly from the same provenance. He has tried to get access to some of the mummies and that Jaime Maussan is promoting. And he's not able to get access to them, possibly because there's some sense of competition. I mean, if anybody should get access to them, it would be Terry, because he's got more direct knowledge than anyone. I want to say one thing I should certainly mention is that Terry made a six-hour, six-part documentary about his involvement with the case. And everything that I'm telling you is shown. He meticulously recorded everything. So he recorded the meeting with Ronceros. He recorded the first specimens that he got, opening the boxes, you know, like one of those YouTube the electronic device. He opens the boxes and it's totally real. He just was there. He said, this is something that could potentially be important. I'm going to document it. And he did that. 6 hours is a lot to watch. It's on Vimeo, and it's called Tridactyl. Tridactyl, which is the fancy word for three fingers. And it turns out it might be called Tridactyls, but it's very available. And I think for anyone who really wants to know the backstory, that's much more accurate than anything I could tell you. I can tell you from my, from the beginning of my involvement, but it's very well told and very well presented, so.
No, I appreciate that. And listen, just as part of my getting back to this, so 2016-17, anonymous location currently. Thierry doesn't know where the location is, but you've got the samples being brought to him. He doesn't know where they're coming from. He just knows these incredible looking bits of body, skull specimens, are being brought to him. And he knows there is a larger being, which is the one we now know as Maria, that was presented by Jaime and others across various conferences as the kind of bigger specimen. So really, as far as I can tell,
if it were not in the fetal position, let me make clear that one thing that I do believe, since I'm sort of not trying to be adversarial, but since I'm rebutting to some degree what Dr. Masters says, I think he tended to conflate some of the various specimens, making statements about one and applying it to the other, which I think is possibly not appropriate. There are at least four species, apparent species, that seem to be coming from this location. And when it comes down to it, there are two possibilities in the way I see it. One is that Mario has access to a workshop somewhere in the Nazca Desert or somewhere in Peru, where they're putting these things together from disparate bones presenting them as mummies for some reason of making money. If that's the case, A, they're not making any money. I can tell you that. At least they gave them to Thierry. The whole situation speaks against that theory. And I'll get into that in a moment. The other alternative is that they are real and that Mario is telling the truth, that he found them in a cave in an undisclosed location. So if you have two alternatives, as Sherlock Holmes says, if you eliminate the impossible, what you have left is the truth, whether you like it or not, however improbable. I mangled that quote, but that's what he said. And I think one can very convincingly eliminate the possibility that these were made in a workshop in Nazca or China or whatever you want. But having said that, there are various types, not even referring to these ones that look very crude and a little bit suspicious. The main ones are these small, what they call the small grays. I think it's not a good idea to bring in nomenclature from another, story, but that's what they happen to call them. I call them the small reptilians. They are about 2.5 feet tall, all very different in their individual features, but all clearly of the same species. And there have been about at least 25 of those discovered so far. I've witnessed about 9 or 10 of them myself, and even cleaned them and prepared them for experiments and stuff like that. And those ones, we call them reptilian because some of them have eggs in their abdomen. And those eggs have been found to be real eggs. They're not jelly beans or rocks or anything like that. Now, I think that the more you know about the science that's been done on these things, the less likely it is that someone made them in a warehouse, in a factory somewhere. For one thing, every bit of organic material from these beings has been dated. It doesn't matter if you take it from the top of the head, the tip of the toe, or the back of the neck or wherever. It all dates to the same period. And these small reptilian ones can be dated by carbon dating, and not by one lab, but by 7 or 8 different labs around the world. Carbon dating is rather easy and it's rather dependable. And they all come in with between about 900 and 1100 years old. So we're not talking old, like a species that's necessarily extinct old, like a dinosaur. Mm-hmm. Something like that. I mean, the Inca Empire was in full swing during this time. So if you think about it, if you wanted to make a little mummy to fool people, you would find a human pelvis here and a llama skull there and a snake ribs there and whatever you would find to put into this thing. Each of those things that you found would have to be the same age. Now, how do you know they're the same age? Do you send them to the carbon-14 lab to find out they're the same age before you clump them together? That seems extremely unlikely to me. I mean, but there are so many other things that indicate that these are authentic. Just to get back to the various types, those are the small reptilians. Those are the ones that I've been back and forth on, and I'll tell you why. When I say I've been back and forth on them, I'm back and forth on whether they are entirely authentic remains of a being that looked exactly like that, that's been unaltered. But I do not have any suspicion that they are modern fakes. That's the word that comes up a lot. Obvious fakes, modern fakes, dolls, forgeries. If they were made, they were made 1,000 years ago, as far as I'm concerned.
That's what I was just about to ask, to clear up that when you say modern fake, it could be they were made for a purpose we don't know, from those select bones, snake, a deer, whatever it might be at the time.
Yeah, yes.
But it was made 1,000 years ago, approximately, for a reason. That could be an explanation.
Well, yes. And then you say, well, how would you determine that? You know that the pieces are very old. Maybe they were made, like you said, for some reason. And I just want to stress that that in itself would be an archaeological and anthropological discovery of enormous magnitude. Nobody's ever found a culture that makes alien-looking bodies from different body parts and somehow covers them up in thousand-year-old skin, without a seam, and joins every bone together with no synthetic glue. That is one of the newest findings, is that there is no synthetic glue associated with these things. They were not put together with super glue, which is certainly the way you or me would put them together. And if you think about the process of putting together a skeleton with 50, 60 bones in it, piece by piece, gluing one finger from a monkey to a leg bone from a lizard to a,
Sure.
But they are also held together with sinew, and apparently, and the kind of things they do not differ from what you would expect a mummy to look like, to be in terms of their anatomy. I mean, a mummified being, albeit an anomalous one. Clearly, there are no bipedal reptiles in the fossil record. And I'll also say regarding those, I'll just stick on that topic for a moment. They have bones that are absolutely not from any known animal. We right now are consulting, I say we, Terry and I have gotten are working with a group of scientists from a major United States university, and they have samples that we took from Peru, albeit legally or otherwise. They are doing the most up-to-date testing on these, including DNA. DNA testing was done on these before, and I should mention that what we heard, what we were told, was that the DNA from the head of the creature matched the DNA from the thorax of the creature, matched the DNA from the foot of the creature, which would tend to rule out the idea that they were, foot of snake, foot of monkey, ribs of snake, head of llama. But we are going to, we are now reproducing those experiments. We are running the DNA, which is not a quick process. But that's certainly evidence, very strong evidence, that these are not composites. And I can get into the reasons why I did have misgivings, but I'll hold off on that. Apart from these little ones, there are larger ones like Maria. Now, for many years, there was only one mummy like Maria. That was Maria. And she is very striking looking. She's crouched in the typical mummification position, funereal position of the Incas. She would be about 5'7", they believe, more or less, if she was standing up. And what people said about that from the very beginning, the skeptics who, again, didn't really look at the evidence, said, oh, this is a human skeleton, a human mummy that was disfigured. They took a five-fingered hand and they removed the thumb and the pinky, and now you've got a three-fingered hand. Any idiot could do that. Well, there's a lot of problems with that theory, because the bones in the wrist that meet up with those fingers are very different from the bones in a human hand. The fingers, for another thing, have an extra digit on Maria. And that, in other words, an extra knuckle, if you will. So the fingers are extremely long. They have fingerprints on the end of them. That's how well preserved they are. And they're not human fingerprints. They are more linear. No one can find any sign of broken skin or stitching or glue or anything like that. And again, organic glue has been fairly pretty much ruled out. I mean, non-organic glue, that is modern synthetic glues have been ruled out. But she has also, I say she, it's not 100% sure what her gender is, but she seems to be female. There's no trace of external genitalia. But she also has very unusual teeth, almost two separate sets of teeth in her jaw. Her head is 20, her skull capacity is 20% larger than a normal human being. So if they were just taking a normal human skeleton, a normal human cadaver, lopping off some digits and for, you know, for some reason, what is absolutely clear is they didn't do that recently because there's absolutely no damage. There's no indication of any kind of cutting or suturing or gluing. And it would seem like even if they did that when she was a child for some reason and it healed up or whatever, you know, I guess that's one theory one could make. But the fact is, this is not a normal human being. The head, as I said, and I want to be clear about this because people say, ah, well, binding of the skull is very, very common in cultures all over the world. It's very true. In ancient Egypt, you look at the skull of Tutankhamun or his mother or any of those pharaohs, and their heads are wildly distorted from ours. So they go way back, but they go back. And the volume, they've just had the shape change, the actual volume inside, which is what the brain, where the brain resides, is the same as you and me. Those people did not have bigger brains than you and me. They just shaped their heads through whatever means, taping or binding.
Sure.
And that's been done in cultures all over the world. That's a very interesting question from the UFO point of view, is why they would do such a thing. Were they trying to make themselves look like somebody who they felt were superior? That's a possibility.
Yeah.
In any case, that's not the case in this, with Maria. Her brain case is 20% larger. Whether that means she was 20% more intelligent, I have no idea. Maybe she was much more intelligent, or maybe she wasn't. The eye sockets are actually 20% larger than, 20-25% larger than ours, relative to the skull. And this is just not something you find. You don't see people walking down the street with eye sockets that are 20-25% larger than normal. We pretty much all have the same eye size. And so if you want to go with the idea that they manipulated or mutilated a cadaver or a mummy, you have to go with that they mutilated something that was extremely unusual to begin with, right? And that's just a matter of taking a caliper and measuring, and they've done that, and you can see that. And you can also see the CT scans, which show every little detail of these things anatomically. Now, I said there was only one back when Terry received Maria, and there was only one for a long time until about 2 years ago. Terry received from Mario, the tomb robber, another mummy which looked like a child, also with three fingers, three elongated fingers, also in that funeral position. That one they called Earl, and I believe Terry did some CT scans and tests on it, but then returned it to Mario for whatever reason. Then Jaime just recently in the last year was given, I think, four or five new specimens of this larger creature, which is clearly mammalian. It's not, there's no question that that they have eggs. This looks very human. It's clearly got everything that a human has, except in the case of Maria, at least, and I don't know about the others, apparently it has no navel and it has no nipples. So make of that what you will. To me, that speaks of some kind of cloning where you don't need to give milk and you don't need, and you're somehow, I don't know, more advanced form when you're, you know, it doesn't sound like us.
More like an organic robot, almost. If you were making a robot or a machine to look like a person, then you wouldn't have to put nipples or a navel on it, would you?
You would have to add that, yeah. I mean, right, they're not added. So apparently they're not there. Now, some people can look at the CT scans and saying, oh, I see the trace of it there, or they can agree. I mean, I'm not a scientist, but that's what the scientists that have looked at these things, and there are many, have concluded.
Can I just ask on that, because you've mentioned a few times, one of the things that has been thrown at this is that there has been a lack of scientists involved. Are there more folks looking at these samples, materials, beings than we know publicly?
Yes, absolutely. I can say that with 100% assurance. I will also say that it is very curious to many people, and including me and including Terry, that when he says we have possibly found a non-human humanoid technological species remains, you know, in a cave in Peru, you would think people would pour down from Harvard and MIT and all the big universities or smaller ones. And they didn't. And the only explanation I can give for that is having witnessed my brother and his friends, who I love very much, but they will not discuss that topic. And we all know the taboo that that has in academic and media circles. So the media is going to jump on it to say fake mummies, and the academia is going to say, we don't want to have anything to do with this because we got tenure coming up, or we're tenured now, and we don't want to screw up our relationship with the university. Look what happened to John Mack in the 1990s, right? He was pilloried by Harvard. My brother's at Harvard, by the way, but John Mack, you know, almost lost his job. He was threatened. He had to ruined his life for years. He had to get representation, and they finally convinced Harvard to let him stay. But he was the head of the psychiatry department and a Pulitzer Prize winning author. I mean, that's not someone you get rid of quickly, but him talking about UFOs and abductions was too much for Harvard, and they let him go. So you can understand why there was that hesitance to come.
And we saw the reaction Avi Loeb got back when he first came out talking about Oumuamua, and there was a Zoom call where his colleagues on the Zoom call and very serious academics, intellectual folks were chastising him. Not just one, there was multiple. I remember one woman in particular was really scathing of him, not professional at all, and this is a fellow colleague, just for being involved with the UFO topic. So Avi Loeb's obviously came out the other end of it, and I'm sure he still gets that from time to time. But right. I can absolutely see why a lot of folks would stay away from this. Something I don't think we've came to yet is, how did this go from a project which Thierry was very much at the heart of, yourself, you got involved early on,
I'm very much adjunct. I don't want to claim that I had anywhere near the involvement of Thierry.
No.
I was a guy who was able to come down, do some translating, help out in the lab, et cetera, like that. But I am an observer, really.
No, that's fair. How did Jaime and co. then suddenly seem to take this over?
Thierry, if I understand correctly, and I hope I'm not wrong about this, I believe Thierry approached Jaime because Thierry didn't know who Jaime was, not being in the UFO field, and Jaime being Mexican, although I think Jaime's known in Peru. But anyway, Thierry didn't know who he was. Somebody said, oh, you've got to get this to Jaime Maussan. He will fund you. He will give you the money to hire, to take X-rays, to take CAT scans, to do DNA testings, to do carbon-14 and all the other things. And Thierry, being a man of good faith, you know, thought, okay, well, why not? I'll reach out to this guy. And he did. And Jaime was amazed and fascinated, as was Gaia TV. And they both put their claws in it and basically said, okay, Thierry, thanks a lot. We got this, if you know what I'm saying. And really wanted to take it over by making documentaries and this and that. And Thierry was, again, he's a gentle, very decent person. He didn't get angry, didn't get litigious on them. But when Jaime just said that he was going to, Thierry made a meeting, I think it was 2019 in Peru, before the Peruvian Congress. It was the first big meeting about these mummies. And a lot of scientists came from around the world, some associated with Gaia, some associated with Maussan, and some that Thierry had recruited. And Jaime really made the effort to take that out of Thierry's hands. And Thierry canceled it. He said, no, not that I don't trust you, Mr. Maussan, but I got this. You know, this is my baby, and I know the people I trust. And I think Thierry had also heard that Jaime had a checkered reputation, as you mentioned, and he was just taken aback by how audaciously they tried to sort of nab it from him, and he said no, sorry, and they actually canceled it and then put it off for another 6 months later or so. That's where I went down to Peru with Robert Salas. Some of your listeners know Robert. You probably know who that is.
Yeah.
He was the Air Force missile launch officer whose missiles were disabled, apparently, by a UFO that was hovering over the base in 1967. And he's been very outspoken about that. And wonderful, incredibly intelligent and gracious person. I had met him in 2013 at that wonderful hearing, at the press hearing, at the press club in Washington, D.C.
Yeah.
A lot of the people I admired in the field. And I called him. I said, hey, you want to go to Peru? There are these crazy mummies. And he said, nah, I don't. And then when I showed him a picture of the hands, he said, oh, fuck, I've seen those hands before. Because it turns out after that experience in the desert, I mean, at the Air Force base, he had some encounters. And he said, those hands look like the hands that I saw. And he got on the plane at 80 years old, and we met in Cusco. And we met in Lima. We went to the hearing, and we were taken to see so we went to the hearing in Lima. And then after that hearing was done, we went down to Cusco, and that's where I first saw the bodies and Bob first saw the bodies. And we're both convinced that we were convinced at that point that there was something very important there.
So Jaime and co get involved. Now, I'm not too sure exactly. Well,
it wasn't like Terry was trying to exclude, exclude Gaia or Jaime. He just didn't want the case commandeered by them. He wanted to have his hand in it because he felt it was very important, and he felt he could handle it in an ethical and, you know, a responsible way. And he maybe wasn't that confident, but he didn't try to kick them out of the conference. They were there at the conference as well. And all the people that they had hired, you know, had enrolled to look into these things. And there were some of the scientists had very good science. But it's been a rocky road between Terry and Jaime. I can't say they're enemies. They're not at all. I'm sure there's mutual respect there, but there has come a little bit of a competition. And of course, Jaime is a person with a tremendous amount of money and influence. And Terry is a archaeologist sort of working on donations. And it's not an easy, it's not an even playing field. So I was saying that Jaime actually acquired, apparently with money, five more of these large mummies, or four, I believe there's four. One of them, and this is what removed any doubt from my mind, one of them was called Montserrat. And this was a mummy that they did a CT scan of, entirely unaware what was inside it. And they found a presumably 4-month-old fetus gestating in the amniotic sac inside this mummy, who had no scars or any indications that it had been mutilated or dug into. And there was this tiny 3-fingered fetus with 3 fingers and 3 toes. It's pretty compelling as far as I'm concerned. Yeah. But that's in the hands of Jaime now. And hopefully he's got good people. He seems to be working with people from the University of Colorado and the Denver Medical Examiner. So those people are serious. They're not going to fool around with this thing.
Yeah, so let's touch on that then. And I hope people are keeping up to date. And already what I'd like to do, William, we're by no means done here, is if anyone listening to this now has questions, I'd love them to send them in to me. And we could follow up with those at another point. That would be great. Even if we send them over to you in advance to say, does Thierry want to give you any answers off the back of it? And you could come on with some of those. But let me take you to that period last year then when Jaime had that presentation in Mexico that had quite a stir, where the body was unveiled. This was a conference where Ryan Graves, many folks will know of, has his wonderful podcast, speaks really well and represents the UFO topic well.
Yes.
he was at that, and he says he had no idea they were going to present this body. This body was wheeled out, and I know there's some conflicting reports on that, but I'm just saying that's what Ryan says, so I've no reason to disbelieve him. Right. Ryan left the arena to not be involved with it, is what he says. And Jaime and co present the body for the first time. And everyone was like, whoa. And I remember waking up in the morning. I was traveling, I think, to London that day. And I was on a train at like 6:30 in the morning, still not halfway through my coffee, waking up. And it was Mexico have just disclosed. And I was like, what? And I'm looking, I'm getting these links from folks I know in different time zones. And sure enough, here was the body. And then over the course of the following months, these presentations have happened. And you'll have seen, I'm sure, following along, I've been accused of being disinformation on this, which is wild, right? Yeah. I would love nothing more than this all to be genuine, but from my point of view, and I'd love you to disagree or agree or what, it looked like it was handled badly technically. Bear in mind, Gaia, who are involved with this, as of May 24, I believe, according to figures online, are worth $106 million, couldn't put a live stream together for this to go out, you know, in any kind of technical proficiency to show what they were trying to show. The live stream didn't start at one point. They had folks involved. The microphones then cut off. There were various streams. So it was very difficult to follow along.
Yes. You're speaking of the original conference, because there have been two more since then with Jaime.
So it was one of the ones recently. I think it was the one in Los Angeles
that was a few months ago. Technical disaster.
Yeah, so that was poor. There was also, I don't know if it was that one or the one before it, where one of the mummy's fingers appeared to be broken. So it looked like it had been damaged. And everyone was basically commenting that they've clearly not looked after the sample they've got either, which doesn't look great.
Yeah, I suppose if the finger was lying there, you could say that it was broken then. Otherwise, it could have been broken before.
It was hanging out, dangling.
Yeah. Okay, yeah, that's bad. It's not a good look.
So what have you followed with all of this and these kind of more recent takes?
Cherry was invited to the, like I say, there's not open antipathy between these people, and Jaime knows that Cherry is very valuable in this whole discussion. So he invited Terry, and actually I was invited also. Terry invited me to that one in Mexico City. I couldn't make it. But when Terry found out that Jaime had brought two presumably the same species or the same crop of mummies that he had been working on for several years, he was as angry as I've ever seen him. He said, because for one thing, it is illegal to take those things out of Peru. And it doesn't matter if you take them to Russia or the United States or Mexico. It's against the law. And that would, Cherry's concern was this would alert the authorities, who would now have a totally valid reason for raiding Cherry or Jaime or any of the people involved, because clearly that was a crime. And I don't think there's any way around it. I don't know how Jaime, you know, maybe paid somebody off. I don't want to cast aspersions, but it was against the law. And Terry has been impeccable about not bringing any of these bodies outside of the country. I will say that some very tiny samples in a test tube that you wouldn't even notice were missing from the mummies have been brought in and they're being analyzed, but nothing that is identifiable as a being.
So that's that samples are allowed out the country. That's legal, small bits of whatever, but the full.
Let's say it's ambiguous and we erred on the side of not wanting to know.
Sure. That's fair. Okay.
But taking the whole body out. And when I saw those bodies in Mexico, I kind of thought they didn't look right, but I can't say that one way or the other. I imagine they were genuine mummies of the same provenance as the ones that I've been looking at.
At this point,
it seems to me that they had noses and the ones that I look at didn't have a nose. That's just something I noticed, yeah.
And this is 2023 we're talking about, that initial. I think it was September 2023.
I thought it was during the summer, actually, but I know the July maybe. Possible.
Yeah, about then, sorry, yeah. It was a bit of a wild summer last year with all the hearings and stuff as well. So the actual location where these bodies are being taken from, is that now known to Thierry, Jaime and co? Do they know where that is?
No. My understanding is that they do not know, and they don't particularly want to find out and go there because, A, it could be guarded by people with guns, which they don't want to have to deal with. Also, they could be followed, or they could be compromised in that way. And they don't want to endanger the rapport that they have with Mario and whoever Mario works with. But they deal directly with Mario. And I didn't get to meet him because I missed him by a day, but Thierry's team knows Mario very well, especially this former, his security guy who was an anti-terrorist policeman for 30 years and a tough customer. And he deals with Mario on a kind of a brotherly, because they were the opposite sides of the criminal thing, but the, you know how yeah. cops and criminals are not that far. They understand each other. And
there's
I
a good TV to, show there. There's a good TV show in that, I'm sure, like that kind of, you know.
Yeah, absolutely. Like Dexter, so that, for example.
yeah. But that's what's kind of, so that is still quite a strange question mark over this whole thing, that location is still secret to now. And it very much relies on Mario bringing the samples to them. Yeah, that's okay. As far as we know. Yeah,
I can say that the argument I use, and I hope it's clever, I hope it's apt, is that if they find a missing unknown Leonardo da Vinci painting in a dumpster in Hackensack, New Jersey, right? People would say, "Well, where did it come from? How could it have gotten there? You know, it should be in Florence, or it should be in..." Well, it doesn't matter how it got there, really. If it's real, that is the story, not how it got to the dumpster from wherever it started out. That's important, and it'd be nice to know. But if it's a real Da Vinci, then suddenly the art critics and everybody's going to start studying it because it's important. And that's what I say about these things. If they, just because we don't, and for me, it's 100% understandable why Mario doesn't want to disclose this. I mean, the last thing he wants to do is the Peruvian government to go in there and just flamethrow the whole place, because for whatever reasons, it is absolutely clear that they do not want this story out. Or more likely, they would go in there and clean it out with 100 troops and put everything in boxes and take it to their equivalent of Area 51. But he certainly doesn't want that. And I'm going to say something terrible now. Why the Peruvian government has not kidnapped Mario and tortured him into telling him where it is, I do not know. I don't think that's...
Or followed him, or tailed him, or someone in the US government, you know, or a spy. Yeah.
This is a much bigger mystery to me than why he hasn't disclosed it.
And just on the location, William, I'd love to come back to you on that, and this is just a personal thing. I appreciate for a Da Vinci, yes, that's right, because ultimately, yes, you've got it. That's fine. But I think what I'm thinking, and I don't know how you think of this, and it's probably different for many folks, the way I think of it is these things are in some kind of cave, I believe. So in my head, there's...
Cave, my understanding is this more a system of tunnels, a very deliberate, sure, right. not a natural cave, but a gallery.
William, that is even more exciting then. Okay, so in my head, I've got this location, this very secretive location, where there may be hundreds or thousands of these bodies.
And who knows, technology, other things, other artifacts.
It's very unlikely. If I go back to the location of a stolen Da Vinci, I'm going to find a factory that was producing these for 1,000 years. But there's a chance that if I find where these bodies are, there could be, almost like you say, some kind of ancient genetic factory or manipulation. Are you going to discover a craft, some kind of ancient technology, some kind of underground pyramid that we've never discovered? Who knows? That for me is fascinating, and I just don't know why they wouldn't have gone and found that by now. But like you say, if I'm Mario, yes, and I'm doing what I'm doing, then I don't want anyone, and I'm sure this isn't someone who's been doing this for a couple of months or a couple of years. They are very highly skilled at what they do. And
Mario was actually known to Thierry, because he's a tomb robber and Thierry is an archaeologist. Mario was he was not a stranger, an entire stranger to Mario, to Thierry. So that's probably why Mario brought the bodies to Terry. But think about this. If you are making fake things to fool people in order to make money or get famous, of course, Mario has not tried to get famous. And as far as I understand, he has not made much money from this, except for possibly from Jaime Maussan, who paid him for some bodies.
I was just going to add that because some folks will immediately say, well, Thierry, fair enough, has his morals with this and he's not wanting that side of things, as we know, or as you've mentioned. But you don't know, or I don't know, that Mario isn't getting a considerable sum of money to bring more of this stuff to him.
I do know that he did get a considerable amount of money from Jaime. And if Thierry had possessed a considerable amount of money, he probably would have gotten a considerable amount of money from Thierry, because they both realize that this is a super important, or they both believe this is a super important thing, and it's worth almost anything you can throw at it. And we're not talking about millions of dollars, much, much less than that, actually. So we're not talking huge money. I thought, when I first heard about this, I thought, God, some Russian oligarch would want to buy one of these things for, you know, $10 million to show his new mistress and his dasha. Yeah. You know, that's what I would do if I, no, I'm joking. But then I thought, let's say you sell one to a Russian oligarch, and the Russian oligarch takes it to his scientist friends and they say, you know, this is made out of llama bones and, you know, and monkey ribs. Yeah. Then that Russian oligarch goes back to Peru with Igor, and Igor tears you into 1,000 pieces. It's not a good plan to screw around with super billionaires from Russia or Saudi Arabia or the United States or anywhere else. You know what I'm saying? Which brings me to another point. What did Mario do? He didn't say, Terry, do you want to buy these things? He said, Terry, you know scientists, you know doctors, you know radiologists. Find out what these things are. And that's what Terry did. And in the film, you can see the first people, very, very capable, well-known doctors in Cusco, who looked at these things and said, this is not a human bone. And radiologists said, I mean, they've said, these are not human bones, and we don't recognize what they are. Now, one of the things we're doing now, again, you asked if there were people on this who hadn't been before. Yes. And they're associated with the scientist who came down with me last time in February. And they are really on it. And one of the people in that group is a veterinary radiologist who can tell you what animal a bone is from.
No, I appreciate that. I've got some questions. Sorry, William, go on.
No, please.
No, I've got some questions that they may be slightly out of order. I don't mean as in they're bad. I just mean we might have passed this, or we have to go back and forward on it.
Okay,
yeah. So you're the whole courtroom's out of order in this one. Let's get through some of these, and then I've got some listener questions as well. First one, you have said previously, I believe with Whitley Strieber last year, and you didn't go too far into it, maybe you can now, you had studied a mummy in the same family and you'd paid out of your own money for CT scans to be performed. You were also willing to give out a file for analysis on that too to folks. And I just wonder, has anyone taken you up on that yet? That is all for part one. Part two will be out in the next couple of days. You can listen to this episode already in full, ad-free, and with no sponsors for less than the price of a coffee. If you head on over to Patreon or Apple, you can subscribe to the podcast for less than the price of a coffee, or take up the 2 weeks free trial that are available on those platforms. You can head on over to Spotify and search That UFO Podcast Premium and get access to this episode in full, no adverts, no sponsorships, and also with some extra bonus content as well. Thanks for listening, folks.
Hey, it's Ryan Seacrest. Life comes at you fast, which is why it's important to find some time to relax. A little you time. Enter Chumba Casino. With no download required, you can jump on anytime, anywhere for the chance to redeem some serious prizes. So treat yourself with Chumba Casino and play over 100 online casino-style games, all for free. Go to ChumbaCasino.com to collect your free welcome bonus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Riley Herbst from 2311 Racing here, and you know what grinds my gears? Waiting for coffee. But instead of counting frappes and lattes, I fire up Chumba Casino. No apps, no fuss, just fun social casino games to pass the time. By the time my coffee's ready,
order for Riley.
I've already taken a few victory laps. Next time you're stuck waiting, make it entertaining. Play for free at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Every business has an ambition. PayPal Open is the platform designed to help you grow into yours. With business loans so you can expand and access to hundreds of millions of PayPal customers worldwide. And your customers can pay all the ways they want. With PayPal, Venmo, Pay Later, and all major cards. So you can focus on scaling up. When it's time to get growing, there's one platform for all business. PayPal Open. Grow today at paypalopen.com. Loans subject to approval in available locations.